Our devotional speaker today is Sister Linda Long, Chair of the Department of Mathematics and Computer Science here at Ricks College. She will be introduced by her daughter-in-law, Christy Long. Following the devotional message, our benediction will be offered by Alina Warren, a freshman from Vancouver, Washington. Sister Long.
Jonathan, Sister Long's son, and my husband had hoped to be here today to introduce his mom, but the last minute he had the chance to go whitewater rafting with his dad. So Brother Long and Jonathan are having fun in central Idaho right now. Sister Long was born in Los Angeles, California. While growing up, her father was a pilot. They moved 9 times before she was 11 years old. Finally, they decided to settle in Manhattan Beach, California, where she spent a lot of time on the beach. Following her graduation from UCLA at age 21, Mom started teaching junior high school math in LA School District. Not too long later, Mom and Dad met, and he was also a teacher, and they decided to get married. After getting married, Dad's work took them to Hawaii. They started their family with Laura and Jerry. Soon after having their 2 children, the missionaries knocked on their door and began teaching the family. They joined the church, and 2 more children, Paul and Jonathan, were born into the family. After being away from teaching, Dad saw a listing in the church news for a teaching position at Ricks College. He felt inspired to apply. The family of now 3 children and Mom 6 months pregnant gave up their home a block away from the beach in Maui and moved to Rexburg. When coming off the plane in Idaho Falls, none of the Hawaiian-raised children even owned a real pair of shoes. Soon after moving to Rexburg, Mom began teaching part-time for the math department here at Ricks. After teaching part-time 3 years, Mom went back to school to earn her master's degree. Mom has talked that during those days, she would wake up at 4:30 a.m. to ride the bus down to ISU. After classes, she would return home to spend time in the afternoon with her children, only to stay up late at night again, doing homework and starting all over again the next morning. Her husband, Jim, is enjoying retirement by fishing whenever possible. Their oldest child, Lori, is busy raising 4 children of her own near Logan, Utah. Jerry has recently graduated from the University of Colorado Law School and is taking his bar exam today. Paul is in France for the summer studying with fellow architecture students from the University of Idaho. And Jonathan and I have recently graduated from Utah State, and John is starting his master's this fall at Southern University of Illinois in Carbondale. To date, Mom has been teaching full-time at Ricks College for 15 years and is beginning her 2nd year as department chair. She enjoys teaching and helping her students. Since joining the church 25 years ago, Mom has spent 19 years serving in the primary. She has been the 2nd counselor in the primary for the past 3 years, and last week Mom joked about today and why would anyone want to listen to her, just a little old primary worker. She has also held positions in the Relief Society, Cub Scouts, and as the family history consultant. When John comes into contact with Mom's former students, they are quick to tell him how she is the first teacher from whom they actually understood math. People that I have met that have had her for math always tell me what a wonderful teacher she was and how much they enjoyed her class. It is an honor for me today to introduce my mom, Linda Long.
Well, good morning. I thank Brian for the prayer this morning and thank all of you that have had me in your prayers as I've prepared for this devotional and especially to Christy for being drafted to introduce me today in place of Jonathan. I guess I really do have to stand up for my husband and my son and explain that we had set this date, and then he was offered basically a once-in-a-lifetime chance to float the middle fork of the Salmon River. And I told him, you know, go ahead and do it. And we had been separated this summer because of a family emergency that he had to come home when we were in Europe. And so we had been apart for about 2.5 weeks. And when I came home, he says, we're never going to be apart again. I'm not going on the trip. And I told him to go on the trip. And so It's with my blessings that he's not here today. I wasn't so sure when he decided to take Jonathan, though, that because Jonathan had promised to introduce me. And so, but thank you, Christy, very much. Well, what a beautiful day it is, and it's always a beautiful day, a day that the Lord has given us. And as always, I'm so very happy to be here at Rick's, working with wonderful students and faculty. Often walking down the hall, I have a feeling of pure joy when I see smiling students. How lucky I am to be here. And as I think about the privilege it is to be here, I can't help but think of those who have influenced my life so that I can be here. I'd like to tell you a little bit about those people and the ones that influenced me so that I am standing here before you today. And they also influenced our family, of course. As a kind of a theme, though, as my talk, I'd like to first share with you something that President Hinckley said in April conference this year. He said, "Let us, as Latter-day Saints, reach out to others not of our faith. May we show love and respect and helpfulness toward them. We can be more tolerant, more neighborly, more friendly, more of an example than we have been in the past. Let us teach our children to treat others with friendship, respect, love, and admiration." And you will see that the people that I'm going to talk about and share their stories did indeed reach out and do as the prophet has told us to do. Susie was in eighth grade when I first met her. She was probably 12 years old. She came into my classroom with some friends nearly every day to eat lunch. From the beginning, I noticed something different about Susie. She was special, unique compared to the other junior high school girls. I can't tell you exactly what it was, but I noticed something. We became friends and would often talk about her activities in her church. One day, she brought a book and asked me to read it. It was a child's storybook about Joseph Smith. I read it and thought it rather far-fetched, this talk about golden plates and heavenly beings. I returned it to her and thanked her. We never said anything more about the book. She probably continued to talk about her church activities, but nothing else. We continued to be friends and were able to enjoy each other's company until she left the junior high and went to high school. And that friendship has continued through the years. The impression that Susie made upon me lasted, and I knew that she had a special spirit. Not too long afterwards, my husband and I moved to Hilo and the island of Hawaii. A few months later, I discovered that I was pregnant, and suddenly, for the first time in years, I grew interested in religion. The last time I had been to church was as a freshman in college. At that time, I had attended the church near the university, the denomination I had joined when I was a teenager, but I didn't feel welcomed, and I never went back. It was now 12 years later, and I went to the same church in Hilo. Several of our friends were members of the church, and I remember distinctly sitting there one Sunday morning, listening to the sermon, thinking, "Do they," referring to our friends, "do they really believe what he is saying," referring to the man giving the sermon, "do they really think this is true?" And my question was never answered. Our child was born, and as an infant, she was baptized according to the ways of the church. Soon after, we moved to Naalehu, a small town in the southern end of the island of Hawaii. One day, we noticed the Mormon missionaries riding their bicycles between Pahala and Naalehu. We knew who they were. How did we know? I don't really know. We just knew. They did stand out, white shirts and dark pants on bicycles, in a place where aloha shirts were the norm. It was a small town, and before too long, they knocked at our door. We talked a few times, rather informally. Their visits were during the day when my husband was at work. I wouldn't let them give me the discussions. The memorized presentation bothered me somewhat. We just talked in general about the church. One day, they didn't come to our appointment. I wondered why. And a few weeks later, our family moved to Kihei, Maui. 5 months later, Brother and Sister Goetz came into our lives, responding to the referral that the missionaries in Nalehu had made. They were our missionaries, and they were to be a very big influence in the lives of our family. It all began one afternoon when there was a note in our mailbox from Brother and Sister Goetz, missionaries. I said to myself, oh no, not again. Yes, again. They visited a few times, asked me about my husband, wondering if we would be interested in hearing the missionary discussions. I said no. Jim wouldn't be interested. He had always said he didn't need organized religion, and he had teased me about my boyfriends when the missionaries visited in Nalehu. No, I was absolutely sure he would not be interested. On one of their visits, they asked if they could come when he was home at lunch. I said, sure, why not? Then they would know he wasn't interested. They met him, and I was completely amazed when Jim agreed to hear the first discussion. Completely amazed. After that, they patiently taught us, answered our questions, one keeping the children occupied while the other one taught the discussions. They encouraged us and loved us. Right after Christmas, Jim said he thought we should be baptized, and we were baptized in January of 1975. We loved our missionaries. I asked them how long they would stay in Kahului. Sister Goetz said they had been told they would stay until they went home, which would be in 7 months. I guessed I could live with that. It was a shock then when about a month later, a member of the branch told us that the Goetz had been transferred to the Hawaiian Visitor Center. I cried and cried, and I'm sure it was at least for 2 days. I was so upset that they would be leaving. And later meeting Brother Goetz on the post office steps in Kahului, I cried again. How could we ever manage without our missionaries? How could we ever manage in the church? I wonder if lifelong members really understand what a convert faces as he or she joins the church. As new members in the church, many things were different for our family. First, our very active 4-year-old and even more active almost 2-year-old weren't used to sitting still. There had never been any reason for them to sit quietly for an hour and a half, and they weren't very good at it. After struggling through our first sacrament meeting the day after we were baptized, Brother Long said, if I had known it would be like this, I'm not sure I would have agreed to be baptized. It was a very difficult day. Beyond the struggle with the children, the service was different, the music was different, nothing was familiar, the vocabulary was strange. I kept wondering what a testimony really was. But we kept coming back, probably because of the support of our missionaries, and now they were leaving. President Kimball taught, God does notice us, and he watches over us, but it is usually through another mortal that he meets our needs. Therefore, it is vital that we serve each other in the kingdom. Brother and Sister Albright entered our lives to meet our needs. The Albrights had been members of the church for about 3 years. Perhaps they remembered what it was like to be new converts to the church. In any case, they became our friends. They came by our house to have ice cream, invited us to our home for dinner. We had family home evening together. They were good friends. We hadn't lived in Kihei very long and were grateful for their friendship. I think I said Brother and Sister Albright. I really should have said Bishop and Sister Albright. The other members were kind to us as well, and we felt welcome into the ward. President Hinckley has said that every convert needs 3 things. 1, a friend in the church to whom he can constantly turn, who will walk beside him, who will answer his questions, who will understand his problems. The Albrights fit that need. 2, an assignment. Activity is the genius of this church. It is the process by which we grow. Every convert deserves a responsibility, and primary was my responsibility. 3, every convert must be nourished by the good word of God. He or she must be encouraged to come to sacrament meeting, to partake of the sacrament, and to review the covenants made at the time of baptism. We were lucky to come into a branch that instinctively knew what we needed and to have a bishop who had so recently been a convert himself. About a year and a half later, there was an unexpected knock at the door. It turned out to be one of the elders who had been in Nalehu. He said to me, "How did it happen?" Guess that shows how unlikely it seemed to him at that point. He told me they had been suddenly transferred one morning and hadn't had time to contact me. And at that time, even though they didn't come back in Nalehu, somehow I knew there was a good reason, and it didn't bother me that they hadn't kept the appointment. Now, who did make a difference in my life? Susie did. She was brave enough to bring a book to me and was a wonderful example of all that is good in the church, youth of our church. Although I didn't join the church right then, she had planted a seed. And when the right time came, when I was searching, I remembered her and told the missionaries to come in. Brother and Sister Goats, they answered the call to serve a mission and influenced many lives in Hawaii, not only ours. Many children in Hawaii called them Grandma and Grandpa Goats. We are so very grateful that they were willing to serve and be our missionaries. My husband has often said that he needed a couple to teach him, and they were there, Bishop and Sister Albright. They fellowshipped a new family with love and kindness. They became Uncle Bishop and Auntie Bishop to our children, and they became our friends. They knew just what we needed to stay in the church and grow. You could say it was just their calling, but it was more. Brother and Sister Goats continued to love us and treat us as family, even when they were off their mission and we had moved to Idaho. Our children sang with the other grandchildren at Grandpa Goat's funeral. The Albrights, yes, he was our bishop, but he was more than a bishop. Both he and his wife took us under their wings and loved us into full membership in the church. Am I thankful for each of these Latter-day Saints? Yes, very thankful. Each of them served me and my family and were examples of what each of us should strive for. Before coming to the present, you might be curious how we were in Hawaii. Now, Christy did tell you a little bit about this, but how we were in Hawaii and now we're in Rexburg. One day when we'd been in the church about a year, the church news came through the mail. In it was an announcement for a job at Ricks College in the Landscape Horticulture Department. I walked out of the house with tears streaming down my face and handed the paper to my husband. The job description exactly fit his experience. A month or so before, he had read an article about Ricks College and had commented that he would like to teach at the school. I felt as I read the notice that we would indeed go to Ricks. A year later, we left Hawaii and came to Rexburg, and that was in 1977. Again, President Hinckley, let us as Latter-day Saints reach out to others not of our faith. Susie, Elder and Sister Goats, did just that. Bishop and Sister Albright reached out to new converts. Reaching out, should it be only to those not of our faith? Of course not. It is important to reach out to those around us as well. As mentioned before, President Kimball taught, it is usually through another mortal that Heavenly Father meets our needs. Part of the wonderful spirit of Rick's is that kind of reaching out, and there are many examples to be seen every day, and I can only touch on a few. But I still remember several years ago walking towards a library and meeting a student. She said hello to me and then added how much she liked my teaching. She passed on by. What a nice thing for her to say. It didn't take much, only a few seconds, but it made the recipient's day. You should have seen the smile on my face. And it helped me understand how meaningful a kind word can be. Other students have written thank you notes and have sent cards. Each time I hear or see of these notes, I am impressed by the thoughtfulness of the student, a busy student taking time to write a few words. Some come to visit their teachers. Do little things make a difference? Yes, they do. Sometimes students will say something nice during class, and another student will tease about brown-nosing. You may have heard that happen. My comment is to them, be nice. After all, we all enjoy compliments. Sister Camilla Kimball's motto was, never suppress a generous thought. I think I would say, never suppress a kind word. Two other examples of reaching out occurred some years ago when a member of our department was ill and bedridden. Gordon Hoagland had been diagnosed as having cancer. As he grew weaker and we knew we would lose him, we were all saddened. Gordon was a very important part of our department. He was a true friend of all of us, and we couldn't imagine the department without him. Some of us may have wondered what we could do. There were at least two who didn't wonder what to do. They just went forth. One went to visit him every day, and while there, would shave him. Another faculty member and students from a class spent the day working in his yard, doing the spring cleaning work. These two men knew just what to do to be of service. They filled a need, did it quietly, with no fanfare, only with love and concern. 3 years ago yesterday, my mother had a seizure and went into a coma. I went to California and spent long hour days by her bedside in the hospital. My family was here in Idaho, and it was a very lonely and difficult time. After about a week, Jonathan joined me, and we were together when she died. She was to be buried in Idaho, but because no one knew her in Rexburg, we decided to have a graveside service. We didn't expect anyone to be there except our immediate family. I will never forget my feelings of gratitude for the friends who came to the service that day to support our family, to show their love and concern. They knew just what to do. I will be forever grateful for their presence and thoughtfulness on that day. There wasn't much anyone could say in words, but their presence meant everything to us. Leaving these last three examples that dealt with sadness, I experienced another example of reaching out yesterday. This time, I was helped with a current frustration, one of those normal, everyday aggravations that we face from time to time. As we've said, my husband is gone for a week. We didn't mention that he left behind three dogs for me to care for. Two are no problem at all. The third is a black lab puppy, 7 months old, full of life, the size of a small horse. Now, Christy said, you have to see this dog to really appreciate this, but keep in mind, small horse. My husband's directions were, make sure the dogs have water. Okay, I thought, that's easy enough. Then the black dog decided that emptying the water dish was great game. It seemed like something a baby does when they drop a toy and they expect the adult to pick it up. It was almost as if she emptied the dish so I would come out and fill it again. I'm sure it's true. The spilled water created a nice supply of brown mud. Every time I went out to fill the water dish, she would jump on me with her muddy paws. One time I was in my Sunday dress. Not too smart, I admit. The next time, mud splashed in my eye as she jumped on me. Mud was all over me. Perhaps you can sense some of the frustration I was feeling, and I was very frustrated. Meanwhile, I was trying to work on my talk, and yesterday the battle continued. She was still emptying the dish, although I was hoping that I could figure out a way to stop it. I was sitting in the living room when I realized that she had emptied the dish again, and so obviously what I had thought would solve the problem had not solved the problem, and the doorbell rang. There was a woman at the door holding a bouquet of flowers. As I took them, she said, "Have a nice day." On them was a note from a dear friend wishing me well today. I sat down and cried. Tears of gratitude for a wonderful friend who was so very thoughtful and sensitive to my needs and whose timing was perfect. The battle still rages on, but that gave me the uplift to continue. And I go out in jeans and old clothes now. Have you noticed that some people seem to know just what to do? Others of us wonder what we can do while others just do it. If we look around, we see all sorts of examples, watch and learn, and then practice. Preston Kimball said, "So often, our acts of service consist of simple encouragement or of giving mundane help with mundane tasks. But what a glorious consequences can flow from mundane acts and from small but deliberate needs." These were examples of reaching out in our Ricks and Rexburg community. But what about reaching out to the world? That's something I've thought a lot about lately. President Benson said, "The Lord commanded us to arise and shine and to be a light unto the world." And in Doctrine and Covenants 115:5, I should have glasses. In primary, we say the page. Do we need to do that? "Verily I say unto you all, arise and shine forth, that thy light may be a standard for the nations." Of course, missionaries do this. They go out into the world. But I'm not thinking of the full-time proselyting missionaries. I'm thinking of good church members, people like you and myself. Today, more and more people are traveling and living abroad. Our neighbor's son travels selling computer software. It has been reported that there are 100,000 Americans living in Warsaw and thousands more living in Prague. Two of our grandchildren were born in Germany. Jonathan's patriarchal blessing says that he will work abroad. The world is getting smaller and smaller. Are we prepared to be a light unto the nations if we should happen to find ourselves visiting or living abroad? Will we know how to be good neighbors to the world? What does it mean to be a good neighbor to the world? One thing, we cannot expect conditions to be exactly the same as at home. Nor should we complain when they aren't the same. Keys may turn in a different direction in a lock. The drivers may drive on the opposite side of the road. The bottled water may taste a little strange with the bubbles in it. And if any of you have had bottled water with gas in it, you'll understand that. People may respond in different ways. Foods will be different, and you may long for a hamburger. Actually, that used to be true. In some parts of the world, McDonald's and Burger King's are everywhere. And if you prefer something else, Pizza Hut and Kentucky Fried Chicken are right next door. But it is true, there will be differences, and it is up to the visitor or the newcomer to adapt and to respect those differences. Here at Ricks, we have a wonderful opportunity to learn more about the world and the citizens of the world's nations. We can do this as the international students come to attend classes and to feel the spirit of Ricks. We can get to know them, and we can also learn about their cultures and their countries if we will make the effort. Of course, we can also learn about the peoples of the world through the study of history, foreign language, the arts, and culture. And the better we know the history and background of the people, the better we can love them, understand, and respect them. May we all take that opportunity. This summer, Paul and I went to a monument that shows us what can happen if we don't try to know and love each other. We boarded a bus in Katowice to go to Oświęcim, a small town in the south of Poland, and you may know it better by the name of Auschwitz. You might ask how we happen to be in this part of Poland, or why we were in Poland at all. No, we don't have Polish ancestors, which is why a lot of Americans go to Poland. In our case, it was because Paul had served his mission in Poland from 1995 to 1997. He had always wanted to show us Poland, and as he planned to study in France this summer, it seemed a good time to return to his areas. By now, my husband had had to return to the United States, and so Paul and I were alone as we traveled through Poland. He had served several months of his mission in the Silesia area, which is in the south of Poland, and had been to Auschwitz three times. He was now taking me there. We got to the town and decided to walk to the museum. As I followed Paul's lead, we turned down a wide walkway, and he asked, "What had I expected?" We were walking through a park-like area with trees and lush grass. I said, "Is this it?" He said, "Yes." He told me he'd been surprised about how beautiful it was with the greenery and the birds singing. We walked on and we came to the main entrance to the State Museum in Oshkoshim. There we went into the museum to see the introductory movie. Coming outside, I saw some school children. Tears came to my eyes as I thought about these children and the experience they would be having that day. The place we stood was a memorial to horrible deeds that had happened here. I thought, this is how we can be sure that what happened here is not forgotten. Let the children see and know. It wasn't only Jews who died at Auschwitz and the nearby Birkenau. Poles, Soviet prisoners of war, gypsies, and handicapped people also died. No one knows how many. They can only guess. The guess is between 1.5 to 4 million people. Walking down the halls of one of the buildings, rows and rows of pictures of people who had been interned looked down at me. Some died of sickness, some were executed, and just a few were released. Many were women. These were the Poles who had been among the first to be brought to Auschwitz, and their pictures were taken. Here we could see a few of the real people who had been here, the real people who had died. The Polish government established the museum so that the people of the world could and would understand what took place at Auschwitz, so that the people of the world would remember those who died, people who died because they were different. We must learn to love and respect each other. Then no one can say one group of people is better than another. We hope for peace in the world, kindness and love. I like a quote I found on a calendar. Peace is achieved one person at a time through a series of friendships. It was partly because of a friendship that we had gone to Katowice. We were there to see Paul's first area, but also to visit Robert. Paul had seen two baptisms in his 2 years in Poland. The first was the first weekend after he arrived, and that was when Robert was baptized in a lake near Katowice. Paul and Robert had continued to correspond, and although Robert was busy with university exams, he came to see us. Robert was studying English at a Polish university and spoke English very well. It was fun to be able to talk with him and watch him and Paul renew their friendship. As we talked to Robert, he said he was thankful to be able to read Our Search for Happiness. He says there isn't much written about the church in Polish. He just tries to live a good life. Robert is a member of a small branch and is a pioneer in the church in his part of the world. We can only hope that Robert will stay strong and be part of the growth of the church in Poland. His missionary friends need to continue to reach out to him, to nurture him as he grows in the gospel. We don't need to travel to reach out to the world. It is possible to reach out to the people of the world right here in Rexburg. Many families do that every year without ever leaving home, and will do so again next week during the International Dance Festival. Families and dancers come together, learning more about each other, growing to love each other. The dancers learn more about the United States, and the families learn more about a different culture. Some families host dancers year after year, giving of their time, sharing of their homes, providing food and transportation for a week or 10 days, reaching out. And every year they fall in love with new dancers. They would certainly understand what President Kimball meant as he said, "Let us fellowship the students as well as other people from all nations as they come to our lands, so that we, above all people, treat them as brothers and sisters in true friendship, whether or not they are interested in the gospel to start with. None of our Father in Heaven's children is foreign to him, and this is his work. In the light of the gospel, there are no more strangers and foreigners." Now, some do go abroad to serve. Dr. Head and his family have moved to Ecuador to work with children in orphanages. They gave up their home and comfortable life because they saw a need. Rick's students have also gone to Ecuador to help these same children. We have a granddaughter who will be going to Romania with another church to serve. Jonathan and Christy know a girl that's gone to Russia to teach English, and there are Rick's faculty who have gone to China also to teach English. May I repeat then again what President Hinckley said in April, but this time I'm going to repeat his whole quote. Last time I left out a little. He said, "Let us as Latter-day Saints reach out to others not of our faith. Let us never act in the spirit of arrogance or with a holier-than-thou attitude. Rather, may we show love and respect and helpfulness toward them. We are greatly misunderstood, and I fear that much of it is our own making. We can be more tolerant, more neighborly, more friendly, more of an example than we have been in the past. Let us teach our children to treat others with friendship, respect, love, and admiration. Remember Susie? She was friendly and kind and loving. She treated those around her with friendship, respect, and love. Wherever we are, a kind word, a smile, each can make a difference. We need to love each other and to be sensitive. But how do we love one another? How do we love our brothers and sisters all over the world? Yes, one way is to get to know them, either here at Rick's, in our communities, as we travel abroad, or as we study. As I see the kindness and love that is expressed here at Rick's, I know that we can make a difference in the world. We can be kind and understanding. We can make an effort to learn about the people of the world. And the more we learn about them, the more tolerant and sensitive we will be. Then, if we do happen to go abroad, people will feel of our love. And if they feel of our love and see our good example, we may have the opportunity to bring others into the joy of the gospel. At least we will have been a light unto the world." And then in closing, let us look at Doctrine and Covenants 64:33. And I lost my glasses. Okay. "Wherefore, be not weary in well-doing, for ye are laying the foundation of a great work, and out of small things proceedeth that which is great. In the name of Jesus Christ, amen."